What if New York's most exclusive clubs became venues not for networking or deal-making, but for wrestling with the questions that have haunted humanity since Socrates walked the streets of Athens? For over a decade, this unlikely vision has become reality through Socrates in the City, where Hollywood celebrities, political commentators, and Wall Street executives gather to explore faith, reason, and meaning. The gatherings prove that even in our cynical age, people hunger for more than small talk and status updates. They want to know, is there a God? Why do we suffer? What makes life worth living? These conversations, now captured in book form, offer something rare: intellectual rigor without pretense, profound questions without pat answers. In a world that increasingly treats existence as accidental and meaning as manufactured, these dialogues remind us that the deepest questions still demand our attention, and that truth, beauty, and goodness still draw crowds in the city that never sleeps. If dark energy shifted by just 10 to the minus 120th times its current value, the universe would have expanded too rapidly for stars or life to form. Quantum physicist turned Anglican priest Sir John Polkinghorne uses this precision to challenge the myth that faith and reason are enemies, a notion historians trace only to the 1890s. Science and Christianity address complementary questions. Science tackles how, processes and mechanisms, while religion explores why, meaning, purpose, value. The universe's mathematical elegance suggests a profound connection between human reason and physical reality. Even atheist Fred Hoyle, discovering that carbon formation requires impossibly precise nuclear resonances, admitted the universe appears to be a put-up job. Evolution reveals God's creative method. Rather than a ready-made world, God created one where creatures could make themselves. This gift of autonomy has costs. The same processes enabling creative evolution also permit cancer and natural disasters, addressing suffering more honestly than simplistic theodicies. If God is infinitely good and powerful, suffering shouldn't exist. This question of questions, as philosopher Peter Kreeft calls it, represents atheism's strongest argument. Yet Kreeft offers 6 responses. Philosophically, suffering stems from our finite nature. Our current state is unnatural, explaining why Paradise Lost myths appear across cultures, and suffering makes us wise. Religiously, God's answer to Job amounts to, "Trust me, this world is preparation for the next." And most powerfully, love requires solidarity with sufferers. The most profound divine response to suffering isn't an explanation, but a presence. When Jesus wept at Lazarus's tomb, despite knowing he would raise him, he demonstrated that God's answer to our pain isn't immediate removal, but intimate participation. As Kreeft puts it, he was in the gas chambers. Augustine recognized that evil isn't a substance, but an absence of good, and both he and Aquinas believed God allows evil only to bring greater good from it. While we may not immediately see how our suffering fits into God's larger plan, the Christian perspective offers something unique: the assurance that God himself has experienced our pain and remains present through it. NYU psychologist Paul Vitz discovered that prominent atheists, Nietzsche, Sartre, Camus, Russell, frequently had absent, weak, or abusive fathers, most losing them before age 20. Albert Ellis claimed a good relationship, but was actually abandoned during the Depression. Theists showed a stark contrast. Pascal was lovingly homeschooled by his devoted father. Chesterton enjoyed games and reading with his. Many atheists aren't rejecting abstract philosophy. They're rejecting the God reflected in disappointing fathers. Vitz, himself a former atheist, suggests that showing atheists models of self-sacrificial fatherhood proves more effective than philosophical arguments. His advice? Be the father you never had and always wanted. Kierkegaard lost his faith after falling out with his father, but returned when they reconciled. St. Francis found a father figure in the bishop who reclothed him. This sacrificial love reflects the Divine Father and forms the foundation for healthy faith development, shaping how we understand citizenship and civic responsibility in democracy. Father Richard John Newhouse argues atheists cannot be full citizens because they lack a morally compelling account of why constitutional order deserves loyalty. The founders understood society as a covenant, not merely a contract. As Lincoln said, not a deal struck, but a nation so conceived and so dedicated. Those who believe in transcendent truth make the best citizens because their loyalty to political order is qualified by loyalty to a higher order. They're dual citizens whose ultimate allegiance is to the city of God. This doesn't mean America was intended as a theocracy. The founders recognized that rights come from God, not government, creating a framework where religious liberty flourishes because the state acknowledges its limited authority. When governments establish themselves as ultimate authorities, believers must remain faithful even at the risk of being called subversive. Democracy's health depends on citizens who recognize authorities beyond the state itself. C.S. Lewis warned about the abolition of man through biotechnology and reductive materialism decades before genetic engineering became reality. Political philosopher Jean Bethke Elfstein examines how his prophecy unfolds through genetic fundamentalism, the reduction of humans to their genes and treatment of bodies as raw material to be worked on. This leads to disturbing outcomes, doctors pressuring women to abort babies with minor imperfections like cleft palates. Against this extreme rationality, Elfstein shares the story of Aaron, born anencephalic and expected to die in infancy. Though he couldn't speak, feed himself, or walk, Aaron lived 18 years, clearly recognizing and loving his mother, whose face made him beam. His mother, Paula Jean, provided such exceptional care that Aaron never developed a single bed sore. Lewis criticized the subjectivity that presumes isolated worlds of entirely subjective values, ultimately undermining human dignity. The choice is stark. Either abolish man by obliterating what makes us human, or love and cherish our humanity, however wretched, however broken. Chuck Colson, transformed from Nixon's hatchet man to prison ministry founder after serving time for Watergate, established Prison Fellowship, now operating in over 100 countries. Without transcendent truth, Colson argues, there's no basis for human dignity, leading to utilitarian ethics that devalue vulnerable lives. N.T. Wright, a leading New Testament scholar, explores how Christianity addresses our deepest longings through what he calls echoes of a voice. He critiques pantheism, which offers no answer to evil, and deism, which leaves us alone, offering instead a vision where heaven and earth overlap and interlock. Humans are meant to be angled mirrors, reflecting God's image back to God in worship and out into the world. Christians are called to be agents of God's new creation, setting up signposts to his kingdom through work for ecology, debt relief, and healthcare. Like stonemasons building a cathedral without seeing the whole design, our faithful actions will be incorporated into God's new world. Wright presents Christianity as a coherent story that makes sense of our deepest longings, where our work, worship, and wonder find their place in the divine drama of redemption. The examined life remains worth living for anyone brave enough to ask what makes existence meaningful.